What is going on, guys? We are in the zone, as always, here with Giancarlo Aulino and Nicholas Martelli here in the studio. And today we're going to actually start it off with hockey yet again. I know last week was all about the Toronto Maple Leafs. This time around, it's about Canadian teams, but we're going to start it with the Edmonton Oilers. Quickly, I want to talk about just their struggles this season. 5-11-1 to start the year. They have an .867 save percentage, which is last in the National Hockey League, and a .388 goals allowed per game, which is 30th in the National Hockey League. Now, we all know last year the narrative around the Edmonton Oilers was their power play. They actually set a record. They were the most successful power play of all time. This year, it's looking completely different. Bouchard, Draisaitl, McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, they've all clearly lost a step. I know McDavid and Draisaitl probably are injured. We at least hope so, because this is a massive fall off. I feel bad for whoever took them first in fantasy, because it's not really working out right now. But I just want to ask you guys, before the season started, a lot of analysts were saying that this team was a Stanley Cup contender and one of the favorites to win it. Now, we do see a lot of structural issues with this team. What do you think is the ideal move for this Edmonton Oilers team to be looked at as a Stanley Cup contender? Maybe not this year, but moving forward. Nick, I'll start with you.
Wow, what a loaded question. I think the one thing that everyone got so excited about last year was how easy it was for them to score goals, right? And how easy it was for them to draw penalties and get on the power play. And then from there, it was literally like the inevitable. It was like Thanos. It was inevitable that they were going to score. Whereas this year, clearly that's not the case. They're definitely frustrated. You could see they're not happy with how they're playing. I think it's pretty, you know, relevant that Leon and Connor are both on like their worst droughts they've ever had. Everyone's talking about it. But the one thing that I think no one's really thinking about or alluding to is that Connor's definitely hurt. You know, Connor got hurt before the outdoor game. He missed a game or two, and then they were literally like, okay, Connor, we know you're hurt, but if you're good enough to skate and play, you're going to play because we need to make as much money from this game as possible, probably. And he's been playing ever since. So I think he's dealing with whatever injury he had picked up prior to that game. And clearly he's not happy with how he's playing or how the team's playing. But, I mean, there's so many issues they have. Like last year, okay, their goalies were kind of hot. They didn't have to deal with any of the issues they're having now. Even defense, they weren't as bad as they were this year. But this year, it's just like, it reminds me of the Leafs. When the Leafs go through ruts, they're really bad and they can't score and they don't have an identity. And I think that's what this team is dealing with. It's like, if it's not Connor, if it's not Leon, then who is it? Like, they don't have an identity besides those two guys. So that's what I think it is. They need to figure that out. And maybe if they got to trade people, they got to trade people. That's all I can think of. Aulino?
Their GM, in the summer, went to go get Connor Brown. I don't know whose bright idea this was on his staff. They gave him a bonus of over $3 million if he just played 10 games. What in the hell were they thinking there? Like, did they think that it was going to be a steal? He wasn't really a highly sought after free agent. He was out there. I think you could have got him with a bonus of like $1 million if he played 10 games. Like, I think he had to evaluate what he did wrong. Some of the contracts he's handing out, I think he looked at Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, should have taken advantage of it at the draft and shopped him around, get some interest around him going into this year. And then when this season starts, you can say, okay, this is a guy that maybe we can move in the right deals. Obviously, you look at Nurse, that won't happen. I think their problem was they didn't really build a market for some of their players that they hope to trade at, maybe at the deadline, and get back some assets.
Yeah, I agree. I think you just look at what their team is and how they're structured. It's just not feasible to be a contender. It's kind of like with the Leafs, with the whole salary cap thing, when you talk about Tavares, Nylander, the core four, how can we build around it? Well, you kind of can't with how much they're making. I'm going to continue to say this. Leon Draisaitl might have the best contract in the league, just when you think of what he does on the ice, what he does off the ice, his marketability, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, we quickly need to talk about the goaltending issue, because it's been a recurring theme for most Canadian teams. The Leafs have actually had it pretty nice. Them in Vancouver have had it pretty nice in terms of goaltending. Like, we went from Frederick Anderson to Jack Campbell, and then to Samsonov in a really effortless way. It was just kind of, yeah, we have another guy come in, he does well. We have another guy come in, does well. You look at Ottawa, they've been searching for that goalie for quite some time now. I remember they had Cam Talbot, it didn't work out. They had a couple other guys years prior, it didn't work out. Now you have Korpisalo, he's looking okay, but the team in front of him is struggling right now. Looking at Edmonton, they had Cam Talbot, he almost won the Vezina that year. Did they go anywhere? No. But then you end up getting, I got to give Mike Smith his flowers. The guy brought them to the promised land. Yeah, it was mostly McDavid, but when the lights were shining, Mike Smith delivered. Now you get, you really rely on a rookie goalie in Stuart Skinner last year. He comes in this year, and we all know what sophomore slumps are. So it's definitely taken a toll on Skinner. It's taken a toll on the team. But I got to ask this question for you guys. We all know that there are great trade chips on this team. There's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. There's Evan Bouchard. If you're Edmonton and if you're Ken Holland, do you start there in terms of trying to get a goalie? Alino, I'll start with you on this one.
I think you avoid, just on the situation they're in, I think they have to avoid the defenseman unless it's a Darnell Nurse packaged off to get something. But I think you have to look at Nugent Hopkins to build up and get some depth, get another defender in. Because I think if you trade a defenseman, like a Bouchard, just look at the points that he's put up and how productive he's been. Like, it might put you at a disadvantage come playoff time, because whoever you get in on forward, you got exposed on the back end there with Nurse. So I think they have to just look at Nugent Hopkins. He's been a nice player coming in. First overall, took a while for him to really develop into a solid player in the league. But I think now's the time to really take advantage of that.
I mean, where to start? I mean, jeez, when they pay their guys too much money and even guys that you would think would be expendable can't be because of how much they're getting paid, it puts them in a really shitty spot. I'm trying to think, like, do you package a guy like Darnell Nurse and maybe a guy like Connor Brown or like one of your better AHL players and maybe a draft pick and try to move it to a team that is in need for something or needs to meet the cap floor? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, the crazy thing, as silly as it sounds, based on how they played last year, they technically have all the pieces they need to deal with what they're going through. It's just a matter of them figuring it out. And, of course, like anything, you don't have always time, the luxury of time. I really don't know. I think I wouldn't trade Nugent Hopkins if you're the Oilers, because if there's one thing that's been consistent in your organization amongst all the chaos that has, you know, gone on even pre-Connor McDavid, Nugent Hopkins has kind of been that consistent thing that they've had. He's that guy they can always rely on. I mean, he earned that contract. He deserves that money, but I wouldn't go trading him. I mean, maybe you try to package a guy like Zach Hyman, maybe one of your second or you're not trading Bouchard, you're not trading Darnell Nurse, because you can't move those guys. I mean, Bouchard you can move, but you don't want to move him. You don't. If you're trying to contend, you don't move him. In terms of goaltending, I don't know, what are you going to do? Like, Mrazek's a free agent. There's probably guys that you could sign to a PTO, see if it works, but I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like with them and where they're at with the whole like debacle of what they're dealing with, I just think they just need to maybe play a little bit better as a team and not try to rely on the two guys that they have. I think that's the one thing. Like, pick up your socks and try to figure it out. Like, we saw on the Sweden trip with the Leafs, the second and third line started gelling and getting it going, and they played better hockey. I think, you know, in a league where there's so many superstars and everyone's so dependent on it, goaltending has gone to shit because it's too offensive and no one's thinking about goalies anymore. They want to score as many goals as possible, right? And in terms of doing that, a lot of teams' depth charts are pretty thin, except for a few teams, right? So I don't know, man. They got to figure it out, but you can't trade Nugent Hopkins. You can't.
I think you got to try at this point. I think it's gone to the point where.
But where do you win that trade, though? It's like at the beginning of the year when people are like, if you trade Nylander, you're not winning that trade long term.
I think you have a shot of winning a trade more than the Leafs do with Willie. I think with Nugent Hopkins, he's a guy there. He's not going to get 100 points. Alino said it perfectly. You saw what he did last year. You should have shopped him at the draft. Like, 100 points, he's not getting that again. I love Nuge as a player. I just, on average, I think he was averaging 68 points a year, and then he goes up to 100. You should have tried to maximize the value there and get a goalie in the offseason. They didn't do it. I still think there's a little bit of time. I know that Boston is insane again this year. You look at the defensive play, but there's one nagging issue with the Bruins, and it's they don't have any center depth at all. If you're Boston, Alino, would you end up calling Edmonton for Nugent Hopkins to sacrifice the Vezina winner last year?
I, for one, am very pleased at what I'm seeing with the Boston Bruins depth right now. They're lacking, right? Down the center ice. Now they know how the Leaf fans feel when we got Tyler Bozak, Tim Connolly down the middle. Sucks, doesn't it, now not having Patrice Bergeron bailing them out? So, yeah, I think they're going to have to, but I don't know if the Nuge would fit like their style of play. Like Boston, the way they built their whole team and just a bunch of grinders going out there, like you're going to have Nuge out there playing with Marchand, like, it would be difficult. I know he could do it if you put him with Pasternak, but if they don't gel, like, what other line are you going to, like, try and put him on to spark some offense over there? It's going to be tough.
It's insanely tough. Like, if Boston does try to pull a trigger on that, it'd be a nightmare being a Leafs fan because, I mean, Boston has been playing well regardless of their depth, and it seems like they just always figure it out. I mean, I think an interesting team that should possibly be a trade partner with Edmonton if they're smart given on how bad they've been this year is a team like Columbus, yeah, or even a team that's trying to get a little bit better even though they had a hot start considering how bad they're supposed to be is a team like Philly. Philly would be an interesting team to be a trade partner, but I mean, I don't know, man. Like, Patrick Laine is in a shitty situation right now. He doesn't seem like he wants to play, or who knows what's going on. Do you make a phone call and you say, hey, we'll give us Patrick Laine and a fucking pick or whatever, and we'll send you Ryan Nugent Hopkins and whoever, like, just to make the trade work? Just,
I don't think Columbus needs Nugent Hopkins, as crazy as that sounds right now. You have Fantilli coming up. You got Kent Johnson. Boone Jenner is looking like, yeah, he's a phenomenal player for them. He's kind of looking like he's grooming into being a Bergeron type guy, a 200-foot guy, great leader. He just surpassed Rick Nash for the most games played as a Columbus Blue Jacket, so that's a big statistic for him. But I want to quickly ask you guys, I know there's a lot of realistic names out there. There's Reimer, there's Mrazek, you know, there's Halak, who's apparently rumored to sign a PTO with Edmonton. And of course, they're also interested in any, Montreal Canadian goalie. So there's a lot of options looming for the Edmonton Oilers. They have to think quickly because Jack Campbell, although having a shutout last night in the AHL, is not looking like the guy advertised. But we got to quickly move on. We're going to go on to Patrick Kane and the Calgary Flames. We'll start with Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane is a free agent, boys. It's 2023. This guy was terrorizing the league the last 15 years, and now coming off that injury, teams are looking. Teams are monitoring him, and I can guarantee you there's at least 10, but I got to ask you guys this question. With all the injury history, with, again, how much scoring is up in this league, what do you think Patrick Kane can produce on a team, and which team do you think is the most ideal fit? Nick, I'll start with you.
I think realistically, like, that's the main thing. We got to be realistic about Patrick Kane coming back. It's not 2010, 2012 Patrick Kane, where he literally was just like, you know what, this is my league, too fucking bad, look what I can do. You know, I think in the right situation, depending on what time in the year he comes back and he's healthy and he's playing good hockey, I think maybe, you know, if he plays, let's say, fucking what, 45 games, if we're lucky, at this rate he's not going to play that many games, he's not. Maybe I'll say 25 to 30 points, and that sounds ridiculous because he's not going to play a lot of games, but that's given the right opportunity or the right team. Like, I just think of this now, and it sounds crazy, but a team like Carolina, right? Team that's already relatively built well, can win games, can beat the crap out of you, play defense, has goaltending. What if they sign Patrick Kane to a vet minimum and just kind of slot him in when they need him, put him on the power play, really monitor his minutes and make him as efficient as possible? They're a scary team as it is. I mean, I'm pretty sure the taxes situation in Carolina, there's like almost no tax there either. I mean, he's trying to win again. He's not going to go to play in a team where he can't win. I would love for him to come to Toronto, but I mean,
realistically,
it's not going to happen. If it happens, sign me the fuck up. But I think a team that no one was really going to talk about is probably Carolina. And I think that would be an interesting fit because they have all the pieces that a guy like him would need to thrive playing maybe at most 35 games, let's say. So I want to say maybe 25 to 30 points if he plays a decent amount of games. If not, I mean, he should be able to get 20 points, but we'll see. It depends when he comes back.
This might sound crazy, but Vegas, I would keep an eye on them. For whatever reason, they're very sneaky. And what we saw with Phil Kessel last year, and it worked, was in the playoffs, if you put Phil in, he'll get those points, but you don't have to play him for the rest of it. I think Patrick Kane's in a similar situation where he's coming off the hip surgery, getting back into playing. They'll be patient with him. They'll probably say, yeah, you'll play like most 20 games. We'll manage it out. If it's a back-to-back, you only play one game. And I think in come playoff time, that's what they're buying him for, just to play for the playoffs. And I think Vegas maybe will creep in. Florida's going to creep in just because of their situation. If I'm a team, I want to lure him in. I'll sweeten up the pot. I'm like, you know what? We'll bring in Jonathan Toews too. Yeah. Get both of them. He'll coast on the fourth line.
I mean, with that being said, I mean, even if you're Florida, true, that makes perfect sense. But even Tampa, like, why? Like at this point,
no,
no, no. But at no. this point, why? No, but why not? If you're literally
because it's not fair, Nick. They've already won two cups, almost three in a row. It's not fair.
But if you're at the very end of your window, like they are at the very end of their window.
Yeah, they are.
You sign a guy like Patrick Kane to vet minimum and you say, fuck it, we'll bring Johnny T with you as well, Jonathan Toews.
I'll throw my Leaf jersey out if that's like the year's done. If like, Kane and Toews go and join Stammer, Point, and Cooch.
They both go on vet minimums. They play however... Literally that kind of scenario. Yeah, play however many minutes you want, or if you don't feel like playing.
Come on. Yeah. Bubble wrap them into the playoffs.
Come on.
But what are you going to do? You're going to turn down the opportunity to have two first ballot Hall of Famers on your team when you're trying to win at the end of the window?
Nobody is, but I don't want it to be Tampa. That's my thing. That's my theory here.
I would rather it be Tampa than Florida, not for nothing, with the way last year went.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But I'll say Dallas. I don't know. It's kind of random, but... I mean, Jason Robertson is one of those guys where he's an attractive guy. You know, he's an attractive piece. Guy can get pause.
It's a little sus of you to say it like that, but okay.
He's an attractive piece in hockey terms, okay? He's a very valuable player in this league.
You mean he's a very good player that can score a lot of goals?
Yes, mm-hmm. He's a very good player. I think 50 goals is still in the equation. He's had a slow start. Jamie Benn is one of the premier leaders in the game. Sagan, you don't know what you're going to get with him. He's the Jeff Skinner of Dallas, hot and cold. But again, I talk about spotlights, and Dallas has a lot of premier players that can just let the spotlight fade out of Patrick Kane's light. I think Patrick Kane is at a point in his career where maybe the spotlight isn't good for him. He went to the Rangers last year, and I thought for sure they would beat the Devils, and they got shut out in game 7. They
got humbled there.
They got humbled pretty quickly. They went out, they got Tarasenko, they got Kane, and you got to remember, there's one puck. And sometimes not all the players, it'll work out. Like, look at the NBA. We can talk about the NBA for days with this super team crap, but regardless of the fact, I think Patrick Kane, we all made really great points. I think Carolina is a really intriguing option just because of they just got Michael Bunting. They just got Svechnikov back. They got Brent Burns in the offseason. They look like they're ready to go. Frederik Andersen, what happened to him is unfortunate, but you could slot in Ranta. You could slot in Kochetkov. They all have playoff experience. You look at you, Vegas, man, Vegas. Vegas is Vegas, baby. You know what? Sometimes you got to roll the dice. Casinos, hockey rink, wherever, they cash it out all the time. We always say the house wins, and Vegas, they're a big house. So we'll see if Patrick Kane can go there, join Jack Eichel. They're the next American freaking duo that can kill anybody. But I want to kind of go on to more depressing things and talk about the team that's down the street from Edmonton, Calgary Flames. Now, I remember when the Leafs beat the Flames that night a couple weeks ago. Nikita Zadorov literally goes out right after the game and says, I want to trade. I want to get out of here. Now, we know Zadorov is one of those guys that, again, he's playing great. Great defensive defenseman. I think his trade value is way overhyped. I think he's a okay defenseman. I don't think he's a great defenseman. But there's a lot of names here. There's Lindholm. There's Huberto. There's Markstrom. There's probably Coleman, Mangiapane. There's a lot of guys here that are probably wanting to get the hell out of Calgary. Alino, I'll start with you. What do you think is the issue in Calgary, and who do you think is the most likely option to get the hell out of town first?
Yeah, it's tough. Like, when Tree Living was dealt a bad hand there with Monahan and Gaudreau, like, pretty much saying, our time's up here, figure it out. Kachuk demanding the trade, that didn't help. He kind of, like, for the most part at the time, it looked like a good deal. He gets Kadri coming in, he gets Huberto in a trade. It looks like, okay, we managed to figure this out, but it hasn't worked. So he's gone. He's on the Leafs now. The new GM comes in. He doesn't even really have an identity for this team right now. The coaching staff, I don't think, have an identity for this team. So
no idea.
I think they need a reset. Like, Markstrom, I think, was a really good player, and his stats are suffering here. Kadri is a cup winner, I guess we can say. I just think, like, Zadorov, his trade value is just dictated by supply and demand. Like, he's a good defenseman. Is he worth, like, let's send out the whole barn of draft picks? No. So I think it might be tough. It's going to be a lot of teams looking at, this is what he's really worth. It's going to be tough to, like, move an asset like that. Unless you pair him off with, like, Lindholm or someone like that, I just don't see him getting that kind of move that he wants.
Yeah, no, there's so many issues over with that team. Like, and I think it boils down to, like, the identity. Like, you know, before, you know, they drafted Gaudreau, they drafted Monahan, and they were building this Calgary Flames team that had an identity, played a certain way, and then, you know, they got Kachuk, and then they were playing an even better way, and they were so much fun to watch. Mangiapane turned out to be, you know, a diamond in the rough for them, playing really good hockey on both ends of the ice, defensively and offensively. And then all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, they got the rug pulled out from under them. They didn't know exactly what to do, their course of action. And I think with them not being as proactive as they could have been, it shot them in the foot overall, because now it's like, it's literally just what they got in return for Kachuk, which is Huberto, and then a bunch of misfits that they signed to big, like, they signed Dubé, they signed Uyghur, they got Kadri, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you just jumbled up a bunch of guys that have similar playing attributes, and you think you're going to get a team that can play 200 feet and play good hockey. I don't know what they got to do. I think they do need to trade somebody. Who do you get the most return for? I mean, supply, demand, Zadorov, you'd like to think you get the most.
No, it's probably Lindholm.
Yeah, but the thing is,
That's a problem.
And you also just made him your captain, no? Yeah. Like,
no, Backlund.
Backlund, sorry. Yeah. But that, I don't know, man. Like, ultimately, I think what they need to do is get rid of the guy who's been playing the worst, which is Huberto.
Last 2 years, yeah.
It's been, for the money he's been making, you know, okay, not every player, once they get traded, hits a home run and gets off to a great start. Was he expecting to go to Calgary? Definitely no. There's no fucking way. He was playing in sunny Florida near Miami. It was beautiful. And then it's like, yeah, we're going to drop you into Calgary where it's minus 40 in the winter. People are going to harass you when you go grocery shopping. Like, you know, it's not for everyone. I think he might need, if anything, yeah, okay, he just got a fresh start in a new place. I think he might need another one. I genuinely think that. There's something about the way they're playing, it's not working. If they're smart, even though they probably won't be received well by their fans if they do it, based on how he's been playing, you could probably get a decent amount for Mangiapane. His contract, it's a decent contract. It's not crazy, but you could probably get a nice return for him. If you can package him maybe in a guy like Zadorov, even though you probably don't want to move a defenseman like him, you can get a nice haul. It would throw a lot of teams off guard, but you would at least be able to retool and have a couple pieces to at least try to be competitive instead of just right off the season. So that's an idea, but other than that, man, what are you going to do? You're just going to wholesale the whole team and say we're going to tank for another year and a bit? Like, you can't do that anymore. Like, it's not the same in the league anymore when you have, like, Bedard came and went, you know? No one's really coming up next that's going to be like that, at least as far as we know. So maybe try to make a small package, figure it out. But otherwise, you can't make wholesale changes unnecessarily, right?
I mean, they have a lot of great moving pieces. That's, to me, the puzzling thing with Calgary. You got Blake Coleman on the third line. Like, that's, I think if you're the Leafs, that's a dream player right there, is Blake Coleman. Mangiapane is great. Kadri, cup winner. Hasn't really found his footing in Calgary. Huberdeau hasn't found his footing at all. This guy had 100 points 2 years ago. Sunny Florida, goes to Calgary, and it's snowy nights. It's just not good for him there. And I know there was this narrative about Sutter last year, and maybe they lost the room. He lost the room, the morale of the team. But I think it all started when Monahan had his hip injury back 3 years ago. The guy was averaging 80 points a game. He was assistant captain on the team, best friends with Goudreau. He gets hurt, and it's like there's a domino effect or something. Goudreau doesn't want to be there. Goudreau's production, declined production, rubs off on Tkachuk. Tkachuk gets a little upset. Now all of a sudden you lose both of them in a single offseason. I said to you last year, that's like losing Marner and Willie at once. That's just absolutely nightmare fuel. And then now, I think the beauty of, I bring up Markstrom specifically because they have Wolf in the AHL, and this guy has been compared to guys like Carey Price. He's been compared to the high up type of goaltenders. And, you know, I think this is a time now where we've seen what Vladar can do in Calgary. I think if you want to start him the rest of the way, it doesn't hurt Calgary. I don't see them making the playoffs. You could trade Markstrom with a Mangiapane. You could trade Markstrom with a Zadorov. I think that at least garners you at least a pick. So I'm going to ask you guys this question here. It's going to be a very, very interesting trade that I'm going to shoot out. Alino, I want you to answer first because I know this is your guy. We all know Jonathan Huberdeau. He's making over $10 million. Patrick Laine on Columbus is making $8.7 million. Now, one got benched in the third period a week ago, and the other one didn't even play last game. Nick, you mentioned new scenery. Are you doing this if you're both teams? Alino, I'll start with you. Patrick Laine for Jonathan Huberdeau and a pick just for the cap compensation. Are you doing that? And who does it benefit more in this case?
I think Columbus would benefit. I think Calgary would get a player that, again, would not want to be there. Like we saw in Winnipeg, Laine, he would have those times where he is beloved and then he gets on the cold streak and he wants to retire from the league. And I think Calgary, if they're trading for that, they're paying an extra $2 million like out of their pocket to get rid of one player. They're just, the $2 million or $3 million that they're saving on Laine is going to be headaches. That
Laine's dealing. Your guy. Man. I would think you're in the other. I would think you're the other way.
No, I think ultimately that trade will, it's one of those things where you're two teams and you're
Huberdeau looking at, to Goudreau. That just sounds, it just flows off the tongue, right?
No, I definitely think it's something that could be done. It's one of those things where you're diminishing return when you're two teams that brought in two stars that you thought were going to pick your team up and take you to the next step, or at least try to get you there. And clearly it's not fucking working. Like, it's not. Huberdeau doesn't seem like he wants to play the system. Patrick Laine is the kind of guy where it's like, I'm going to play my game. If we don't play my game, I don't know. I might pack my bags. I don't know. You got to figure it out. And I do think that would work. The problem is, though, you send Laine to Calgary, he's not going to want to play. I feel like, you know, the irony with Laine being a Finn is like, he might want something kind of like Timo Salani, where he gets to go play in Anaheim, play in the sun, do whatever he wants, play with some guys that are pretty decent, be on a good team, not a great team, and maybe he'll score 20 to 30 goals a year because he wants to play. If he wants to play, he'll score more. But I mean, on a team like Anaheim, they're going to have to trade some good pieces if they want a guy like him. I don't know.
Would you trade Troy Terry? Troy Terry and picks for Laine?
It's tough, though. They're in a situation where they got like young players there. Like, I'd be interested. If I'm a goalie and I want to get traded, I'm worried that John Gibson's going to dictate the market here, because that's the best goalie available.
Oh, always. He always does. I remember 2 years ago, I'm not going to Toronto.
Yep.
Don't put me there.
Damn.
Hey, you know what, though? I think an interesting, like, if you're Calgary and you can swing that trade, I'm not thinking twice. I am not.
I agree.
Because you got enough European guys, you know, between Swedes and some Finnish guys that you got on Calgary, where you know, you can build that kind of environment for a guy like Line A to hopefully buy in. But, you know, if that's not going to happen, I think if you're Anaheim and you want a guy like that, I mean, Mason McTavish has been playing unbelievable. I know it's hard to move a guy like that, but you got to think, though, you're not just getting, okay, Patrick Line has been scratched. He's been doing this, doing that, but you're getting a second overall pick, a guy that can really put the puck in the net when he decides he wants to. You're going to have to give up something good. I don't know if Troy Terry's the answer, but
I think it comes down to the way Leo Carlson is looking. He's looking better than I thought. I think right now he's on par, if not better right now, than Fantilli in the league.
Two different players, but
like they both have similar projections right now in their first year, and I thought Fantilli would have the better first year. Again, Goudreau has been a nightmare this season, so maybe that's why it's rubbing off on him. But again, going back to Anaheim, I think it just goes down to who do they value more? Who do you see more value in? Because Trevor Zegras has not been the player that we saw in the World Juniors. He has not been that player.
Well, he's also, you know, the American kid that everyone seems like they've really taken a liking to in Anaheim.
NHL cover boy.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, probably got to his head.
I mean, like they seem to really like him. So, I mean, the Americans are going to want to try to keep their guys. Mason McTavish is a really good Canadian hockey player. I mean, they might not miss him if they can bring in a guy like Patrick Laine.
That's an interesting take. I think McTavish is, I'm not going to lie to you guys, I see him being the future captain of that team.
I don't think he's going to be there long enough to be the captain.
So who do you think's the captain? Troy Terry?
The cover boy, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, that's a terrible that's a terrible captain right there.
Yeah. Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
That's Ducks true. Fly together. That is true. But yeah, basically recapping this segment here, we all know that Huberdeau probably gonna get traded. Lindholm might. But I do think Huberdeau, out of all the guys we just talked about, is probably the most likely to get dealt.
I do think ultimately, if you look at the season and what it's gonna be what it's gonna be. Huberdeau, if you can, Zadorov, because if it's sweet enough, you're going to do it. And then if you're content with letting Markstrom go and going with Vladar and Wolf, do it. Unless what they want to do is try to win something in the AHL, then you're going to keep Wolf down there so you can win. But ultimately, I think those are the three guys that they need to move. Unless someone's going to overpay for a guy like Blake Coleman, which I doubt, but it's happened in the past with other teams. But those are the three guys they need to move.
Definitely.
All right, now we're going to quickly move on to hoop. Last night, me and Nick Alino had the privilege to watch.
Oh, boy.
We had the privilege, and this is the most sarcastic I'll be on the show, to watch a beautiful Raptors team. 27 turnovers.
Oh, man.
They got outscored by, I believe it was 9 or 10 in every quarter. They cannot function right now. Dennis Schroeder cannot be your starting point guard. And I don't know what it is with OG Anunoby recently. He is a turnover nightmare. Now,
the whole team's a turnover nightmare after watching last night's game.
Now, when we look at the Raptors,
the whole team.
A FIBA MVP right there.
When we look at the Raptors, now Nick is going to jump on me when I say this. There is a lot of potential with this team, but there is no direction at all. I don't even think the head coach knows what he's doing sometimes. Now, with that being said, there's teams out there like Sacramento. There's teams out there like Atlanta, who I guarantee you are bothering Masai every single day. Ring, ring. Hey, is Pascal Siakam available? Yeah, send us a trade. Sends a trade. We don't want it. When does it get to a point where these Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby trades finally happen? Because it's been months, man. Months.
It's been years.
Lino, I'll start this with you because I know you watch hoop just as much as me and Nick. Are you trading OG first? Are you trading Siakam first? Or are you trading both at once? Like, what is going on with this Raptors team? They need to figure out a freaking identity.
I think, and I don't blame Masai for this. I think he's loyal to them because, especially Siakam, playing a big role on winning that championship. And I think if they didn't win a championship, he would have traded them like a year and a half, 2 years
effortlessly.
Ago. Yeah, easily. It would have had like a DeMar DeRozan, like a cold call. Where he called him, he's like, yeah, we're not going to trade you. Oh, what, Kawhi's available? Okay.
What was he in, a Target parking lot? He said he was in his car.
Went to a movie theater, then went to the,
That stings.
That was a rough one. So if he's going to do that, I think the best option is start shopping them right now, knowing that you're not looking at the playoffs. Even if you make a play-in by a Hail Mary, you're not looking at that. You're looking at next July. You're looking at the draft in June. You're looking at free agency in July. I think you have to look at who's going to be the best option, who has the most assets that you can take advantage of. And we've seen Masai do it with that Carmelo Anthony saga. Then he goes and does it with Bargnani to the Knicks. I think he needs to find a team where he can take advantage and know that they're dumb enough that, okay, we're going to dump everybody for Pascal Siakam. Okay. OG, I think that might be a little tough. He's on an expiring deal. It's going to be something that lingers on, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, the Raptors are definitely in a really tough spot. Like, you want to talk about a fall from grace? I mean, okay, 2019 definitely. 2019 is definitely not yesterday. It's quite some time ago already. But I don't know what happened. Like, the cohesion with this team, you know, it's weird. It's like they wanted to go with this long and fast basketball team that could handle a ball and shoot. The problem is all these long guys that we've picked up, one, okay, sure, they're athletic, but none of them can shoot to save their lives. None of them. We just drafted Grady Dick, who's probably one of our better shooters, and he's not even shooting the ball that well. He's
not even freaking playing. They're not even playing him. Play the guy.
It's rough. And if there's one thing that really opened my eyes watching that, as hard as it was watching that game last night, was they want to play this high tempo, up court, back court, moving the ball, you know, team basketball. The problem is that the one, it seems like no one on the team knows how to actually pass and no one's actually looking. Everyone's just assuming.
Yeah, not consistent.
And it's so reckless and wild. Like, it's just bad. Like, there are teams like high school basketball, college basketball, they're better with the ball than the way the Raptors were last night. It was just brutal.
Yeah, last night was one of the worst games I've seen in a while, man. Damn.
Like,
I'm not sugarcoating it, man.
Like, no,
they looked out of it in the second.
It was bad.
Siakam went on, I think it was a 7-0 run himself, and you could tell he's just looking around, like, is anyone gonna help me here, or am I just gonna have to drive the pain and get all these hard twos, like very hard contested? And here's another thing last night that really upset me. You have Jakob Poeltl start the game red hot. He had like 8.7 rebounds first quarter. You see that strategy is working in the game. You completely go away from it. The guy, I think, finished with 10 and 10 the rest of the way. So you got one more bucket. Basically invisible. You try and force the three ball. Doesn't work. Gary Trent Jr., you either love the guy, because again, that was a risky trade. We traded Powell for Trent, basically. And you see what Trent has been doing. Yeah, so I think, what was it, last year, 2 years ago, we had that 40-point game, 9 threes in a game, third all-time Raptors history. And then there's other games, Aldino. 1 of 12, 2 of 14. Buddy, stop shooting the three. It is not going in. Pass the ball. Facilitate. Make your team better. That is something I've noticed with Scottie Barnes. When his shot is not going, he'll rebound, he'll steal, he'll pass, he'll do anything but shoot. Yep. This is something that a guy like Giannis has learned. This is something that a guy like Zabonis has learned. Hell, even Paul George. James Harden. Nick's favorite boy, James Harden. This guy went from averaging 35 a game to about 14. But what does he do that actually upsets people? And I know it upsets Nick. He's shaking his head right now. He'll average 8 rebounds and 11 assists and almost get a triple-double. It's what we call the Draymond Green triple-double, the 10-10-10. We all know that. But yeah, this team, they need to stop shooting the three, man, if it's not going to go. Just play bully ball. You're lanky enough. That's what
They're longer than most teams in the NBA,
other than Orlando.
They played the one team last night that's longer than them. The one thing that bothers me about the way this Raptors team has kind of hit this evolution or has changed over the past 5 years is that they were late to the party when the league became a 3-point league. Very late. Even when they won the championship that year, they were a horrible 3-point team. Even the years before that with LeBronto and everything else, they always struggled shooting the ball. Always. It was always a down in the paint, pick and pop, mid-range, foul, go to the line, hard defense. Always been that way. They never adapted to shooting the ball, and now it's really shooting them in the feet and in the nuts because they can't compete once a team hits 4 or 5 threes in a row on fast breaks and losing the ball up the court. It kills them, and that's what happened last night, arguably. 25 turnovers turned into 35 points.
What's going to happen tonight when they face the Pacers?
They're either going to
get Halliburton had 30 in a frickin' quarter last night.
They're either going to get blown out or it's going to be a close game. And hold on, just before we go on to talk about the trade thing, because I didn't get to chime in on that. Why is it with the Raptors stars and their stars that they've relied on, it always goes sour at the very end? Historically, when you think of all the stars that have played for the Toronto Raptors, it always goes south when it's extension time or they've had enough of Toronto. And that's because of management overvaluing their players, being too loyal, or thinking that you're not going to go anywhere else. You want to stay in Toronto because we're the most multicultural city in the world and in the NBA. Not for nothing. Guys hate paying the tax here. They love the city because of how multicultural it is. Drake's at the games, whatever. But at the end of the day, if you're going to sign a max, you want all your money. You don't want to have to pay 30 or 40% to the government. You want to be like Fred Van Fleet. You cash out on your last contract, probably.
Oh, cha-ching, that guy.
Go to Houston. They're playing decent basketball. He's pretty important for the team. He's a vet. You know, he gets to be a leader in a different way.
Third in the league in rebounds. Yeah. I mean, assists, sorry.
Like, you know, there's value in that. And I think over time, guys realize it. They realize Toronto can only do so much. We hit our peak and we hit our ceiling. We can't go any higher than that. And I think Siakam's going to leave. He'll get traded. OG's going to leave, you know. And I think the thing, if you are the Raptors, you got to capitalize on a team like Brooklyn that needs something to kind of get them going again. Or you need teams that deal with injuries a lot. Or just a team that's kind of stupid like the Clippers, how they're buying in on all these guys because they just want to try to win a championship. And you could leverage that by getting their entire bench that's relatively good six men on any team in the league.
Yeah, bring Powell back, eh?
Yeah. Bring him back. Good pro.
I'd sign up for that.
Now, quickly, before we go to wrestling, I mean, Zach LaVine has been linked to trades too, not just Siakam and OG, but Zach LaVine is a very good player.
Here's a quick update for tonight's Raptors game. Precious Achiuwa won't play due to right knee soreness.
Nice. The thing that sucks about this Raps team too is Koloko, I think, has been injured the whole year. I don't think he's played. Chris Boucher is a great NBA player, but he can't play 35 minutes. He gets destroyed by starting centers.
He's too small. Now
he's relentless, though.
Yeah, but look at the trend for starting centers in the NBA. Besides Victor Wembanyama, who's the one monster who's 7 foot whatever, and he's like 200 and something. Other than that, they're all massive. They're all huge. Boucher's big, but he's a stick. You can't have a guy like that be your center in today's NBA. Even imagine in the 90s or in the 80s, he would have been snapped in half. Like, the Raptors need to catch up with what's changed in the NBA, and they need to do it by making either wholesale changes or changing the philosophy. Playing quick basketball will work in today's NBA, but they need quick basketball that can shoot. They don't have that. If you're going to play quick bully ball, you're going to have a shitty third and fourth quarter because you're exhausted. That's my take.
Alino, where do these guys go?
It's going to be tough, like, especially right now with all these teams loading up, like what the Clippers did getting hard, and I was not expecting that.
No.
So maybe it's a team that's looking to move from 5 to 2, challenge those spots.
I could see Atlanta being a team for Siakam because they lack the four. They have DeShaunte Murray. They have Clint Capella, who I think is a really... He's not an efficient center, but he's a good center. They don't need him to get 20 points. They need him to get 10 boards, 3 blocks in key moments. You have Trae Young, people, I think they undervalue the crap out of this guy. He's really good.
Horrible on defense.
Horrible on defense, but that's not his role.
He was also pretty, like, okay.
Look at Allen Iverson. He was one of the best offensive players, was not that good on defense. Same thing. So I'll say Atlanta for Siakam. I have this hunch. I think they can give us a pretty good return. I think DeAndre Hunter, we could start with that. Maybe AJ Griffin. It's another big that we need. And with OG, I'm just going to go out and say Sacramento just because De'Aaron Fox is a dog. Sabonis is a dog. You had another defensive dog in OG Anunoby. Like you said, a team that can go from 5 to maybe not 2, but Sacramento is definitely in playoff. They're in win now mode, and they're looking good, man.
Doesn't Sacramento have a ton of picks too? Like from all these trades that they've kind of accumulated over time?
They do, and they have Keegan Murray, who is probably not tradable, but they have Davion Mitchell. I like Harrison Barnes a lot to be like a nice veteran to come here. I like that. I think I would start with those two.
I mean, at that point, if you're Sacramento and you're trying to win with how they played last year, why don't you just try to get both of them? Take OG, take Pascal. I mean, OG would be a rental, but more than likely they'd probably be able to sign him. And Pascal, I mean, they could use that extra length because they need to spread the ball out. Because that's what shot them in the foot in the playoffs last year. They couldn't spread the ball out.
Another one, too. Miami missed out on Lillard. And they missed out on a lot of stuff there on Harden. Like, just all these names. I think Miami might lurk. And maybe even the Pelicans to add some more to their bully West. Ball. Because they got Zion. They got JV. They got Zion McCollum, the pylon. Ingram, too. Like, they're a solid bunch.
If the Pelicans are smart, you're trying to get OG because you need some. You need defense down the stretch. That's ultimately, insane, eh? I think another team no one's probably going to think about because they think they're stead packed and they don't need to make moves is a team like the Timberwolves.
Yep.
If Minnesota can add Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby,
it's over.
Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, Carl Anthony, like that team. Wow. That's how you play big and you play long with a team like that. Not with what the Raptors are trying to do.
Memphis would be in the dumps if that happened.
They gotta figure it out, Memphis. I don't know what the fuck happened there. But anyway, we're going to transition now. We're going to talk about Survivor Series. I got no idea what I'm talking about this, so Alino and Chris are going to take this segment. I'm going to be talking about, though, the matches, and then they're going to go on and tell us what they think is going to happen, all right? So starting off with match one, we got this War Games match. It's got Io Sky, Bayley, Zayn, Asuka, versus Charlotte Flair, Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, and Shotzi?
Yeah.
All right. So who do you guys got?
Yeah, this one, I'm just going to go with the heels winning damage control. But after the match, I see a little swerve happening. I think Bayley's going to get ousted from the group. I think Dakota Kai might be a little bit, depending on her recovery from that nasty injury she has, the brace there. But if she's getting closer to getting back into training and getting back into in-ring, I think Bayley's days are numbered in that group, unfortunately.
I got to go with the faces here, man. I just think you look at the weak link there, it is Bayley. I have the same narrative as you. I just think you look at Charlotte Flair, you look at Becky Lynch, you look at Bianca. These are like the big three, and I don't see them losing here. I know they're trying to build Io Sky, and they've done a fantastic job with her. The Asuka heel turn to me, it makes sense, but I think it happened too soon after the face turn, so she's like the big show right now where it's flip-flop, flip-flop, but it has worked. Kairi Sane looks amazing. I'm glad she's back in WWE, but I agree with you. I think Charlotte is going to get the pin on Bayley, and I think after the match, poor little Bayley, she's going to get absolutely destroyed by these heels, so I like how we both have different picks in the first match. It's looking good.
Sounds like it's going to be interesting. Sounds like it's going to be different. Interesting to see what's going to happen there. Match number two, we're moving on, and we have Santos Escobar versus Carlito. Carlito knows cool. Who's going to win that one, guys?
I think this is an easy one. I think this is the layup of the pay-per-view. Actually, well, there's another one, but I'll say Santos Escobar in dominating fashion beats the cool uncle Carlito that's protecting Rey Mysterio over there in the LWO. Listen, man, Santos Escobar is a phenomenal in-ring talent. A lot of people, I mean, people obviously are watching WWE, they're watching him, but I feel like he hasn't gotten the spotlight yet. You know what I'm saying? He hasn't had that breakout promo program. He did on Friday Night SmackDown. I thought it was a great promo against Rey Mysterio. They're playing off the Rey Mysterio injury. I think this is the beginning of a really solid heel turn and a really solid superstar on the way up in Santos. I got him dominating Carlito.
It was a real evil promo he was calling. Oh, I hope you don't walk again. Like, I hope you don't, they're not able to cure you with that surgery. It was a little evil stuff there. He was going there, crossing the line there. But yeah, unfortunately, Carlito came back, I think, just to be that veteran hand, get some guys over. I think Santos is one of them. So I got Santos winning.
All right. That sounds like it's going to be quite the match based on that promo you guys were talking about. It's interesting that they're taking that darker approach with some of the promos I've noticed. It's kind of getting back to like that old school kind of attitude era thing. It's not going to be the same ever, but it's interesting to see they're kind of exploring that option again.
The thing I liked the most about this is they brought up Eddie.
Yeah.
And it's like a tribute to Eddie Guerrero, and I absolutely love it. I'm all in for it. We all know Rey Mysterio just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. Alino, you think this program ends at WrestleMania, or do you think they'll maybe end it a little earlier at the Rumble?
I hope it doesn't, because Rey was already part of that with the Dominic one. That one, I'm surprised they went a whole year building that up and it worked. I think this year they're going to try and do something where Rey can go on to another feud, so I think this might be the Rumble this ends. Another like 2 months and this will wrap up.
Moving on to the third match of the night, we got for the women's world title, we got Rhea Ripley and Zoe Stark. Chris, who do you think is going to take it? Are we going to have a new champion or are we going to have a defender?
We're going to have a defender. We all know what Triple H has been able to do with these runs. Roman Reigns has not lost it in God knows how long. I think it's been 3.5 years. Gunther hasn't lost it in 2.5 years. I think this trend continues. I don't think she's going to hold it that long, but I don't really see Zoe Stark being the one to take it off of Rhea Ripley. I think the bigger question here is when does she lose the belt and who does she lose it to? Is it Becky at Mania? I really don't even see that, so Alino, I think you agree with me on this. I think Rhea Ripley, this is just another stepping stone for her, but I think this could be a spotlight performance for Zoe Stark.
I think this might be a squash.
Like Natalya.
Yeah, like Zoe, the whole Trish Stratus, when she was her like bodyguard and everything, and they really brought her up because she came up from NXT, you can tell the fans, like they didn't know who this poor girl was, so... Like, obviously, if you watch NXT, you would, but it got her over with the fans working with Trish and then Becky and being a part of that whole feud. I just don't see her having this performance where she's going to win. I think she'll have her moments there, but I don't see this being a long match. I think Rhea wins it.
Yeah.
Interesting. It sounds like it's going to be one of those typical, even though it's a title match, it'll be the second match is going to go a little longer. It'll have a lot of more ups and downs, and this one will just be kind of like one up, one down, and then good night, Irene, on to the next.
Well, ask Natalya how the last one went. It was about a minute long.
Jeez. Anyway, on to match number four of the night. We got, for the Intercontinental title, we got Gunther going off against The Miz. Once again, Alino, I'm going to start with you on this one. Are we going to have a reigning champion, or are we going to have a new Intercontinental champion?
I think this is going to be the surprise here. The way they've been building it is The Miz hasn't been taken seriously. He fired back in that promo where Gunther was talking about bullying and all the stars. I think this is Miz's time to show that he's a babyface, going to get sympathy from the crowd, get the win. But I think we'll see some little heel antics there. He did a low blow on Raw, so I like how they're not really shifting too much away. I think he's going to maybe hit him with a title. Maybe some of the guys in Imperium come out and accidentally cost Gunther the match, and we'll see The Miz as a new champ.
Wow, that is... I didn't expect you to say that. I'm a big Miz believer, and he's held the Intercontinental title many times. Gunther, I don't see losing it here. I think he has been the superstar of the year.
Yeah.
I think Roman Reigns, obviously... The aura of him is what is he's probably the most important player. But between Cody Rhodes, between Gunther, I think those are the two guys this year that have really shown to me that they are the guys. And Gunther has been doing it every single week. you got to give Gunther his flowers. Maybe if it's not this WrestleMania, because we know we're probably going to see Cody versus Roman Reigns. Maybe after this WrestleMania, he's probably headlining it. I think he's just that big of a guy, that big of a superstar. Gunther, I think, retains. I do agree with you, though. I think it's going to be an emotional roller coaster in Chicago with this match. I think they're going to hint at it a lot of times, whether Ludwig comes out and almost costs Gunther some sort of Imperium, problems there, corrosion. But I do see The Miz hitting the skull-crushing finale to a really near fall. But I see Gunther coming out with the win, retaining his title to God knows, I think it's what, like 600 days now. So I got Gunther retaining the Intercontinental title.
Wow, that sounds like it's quite the reign of him being the Intercontinental champion. Hopefully there will be a change, but we'll see. And now we're going to move on to the main event of the night. Got another War Games match, and it's pretty star-studded. I mean, it's the main event. You would obviously hope so. Hopefully it actually delivers. So we got Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, and Randy Orton versus Judgment Day and Drew McIntyre. So who do we think is going to win? Who's going to get the absolute shit kicked out of them? What kind of surprises are we going to see on this main event?
I think it's kind of debating here, like with Randy coming back, will he turn? It's obviously possible he can hit Cody with an RKO. Maybe hit Drew with an RKO and he can just leave, not being a heel or face. I think Dominic Mysterio is going to get, this is going to be an emotional one for him. This is going to be one where this is his initiation to the big time. He's going to go off the cage on that beam in the middle. They're going to put him through hell, that poor guy. So he's going to earn being that prodigy that was fast-tracked to the main roster here. I'm just going to lean more towards Seth Rollins' team getting the win, and after the match, Orton RKOs Cody and leaves.
I'm going to agree with you there. I think the faces have to win just based off of Randy being off for 18 months, but who was the guy that took him off of television? Jey Uso. He's on the same team. I love the way they played it off on Raw. On Raw. When you see him and he's just like, oh shit. Like this is happening.
It's like, oh no, Randy's coming back. Fuck.
So I think, like I was saying to Collab, it was interesting how you have Jey Uso in this situation. I think LA Knight is one of those guys where the freaking last 3-4 months he's had, you would assume he'd be one of the faces here. Jey Uso, though, I love the long-term storytelling here where he has problems with Randy Orton, big-time problems with him. He's been connected to Cody Rhodes. He's been connected to Sami Zayn. I think this is basically everybody saying, hold on a second, Jey Uso is main event here. It's basically almost all revolved around him, Alino, if you think about it. Like Drew, like he's had that program with Drew McIntyre. He's been flirting with Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day. He's basically involved with all the baby faces. This is going to be a massive, massive emotional ride. Like I was reading an article today. This is one of the more well put together main events of a pay-per-view in a very long time. Like we talk about all those Survivor Series matches, like what was it, 2017? You had Kurt Angle, Bobby Roode, like Triple H, just throwing guys in there left and right. This one actually has substance. All the guys have a storyline. I agree with you, though. I think at the end of the day, I'll say either Cody Rhodes gets the pin or Randy Orton gets the pin, and whoever pins afterwards is going to taste an RKO. And I think just the way that Cody Rhodes is the guy that kind of like introduced him, and yeah, it's an old friend and all this, I think they're going to groom Randy Orton to be the hurdle for Cody to get over to be Roman Reigns. So I'm going to go with the babyface is winning. Cody Rhodes is the guy here, the main event star, just for Randy Orton to say, yeah, I'm the good guy for now, but you guys all know me as the Snake, the Viper, the Legend. RKO is coming. To everybody in that ring.
Even Rhea Ripley.
Oh, yeah. Even Nia Jax, whoever. Whoever the hell's in his way, getting RKO'd.
Damn, that sounds like quite the ending to a pretty decent card by the looks of it.
Nick, you know Randy.
Oh, no.
You know Randy.
I know Randy. I know Randy. We all know the real Randy. We all know the Viper.
Punting heads over there.
Punting heads. It didn't matter who it was. Anyone could have got it back in the day.
Stacey Keibler?
RKO out of nowhere.
That was hilarious.
Kisses her and then RKOs.
But there might be some surprises at Survivor Series because, I mean, it is in Chicago. So I got some questions for you guys before we end off. Is CM Punk going to return? Do we think he's going to return? It's not a loaded question. They're in Chicago. He's from Chicago. It's been a guy that's kind of been all around and all over since he's left. And, I mean, signs look like they're pointing to him returning. So what do you guys think?
I think this is a trade, that unintentional trade. Edge goes to AEW. CM Punk, who had the owner of the company apparently fearful for his life at a wrestling show, got fired for getting into a fight with one of their pillars, Jungle Boy, and went back home. And
that stud over there.
I think he's going to return at Survivor Series. I think they're trying to like take all the attention away from it. What I think they should do, Shinsuke's kind of been
on fire.
Yeah, he's making... I don't think they would do this without CM Punk. If they do it and he doesn't come back, that would be the ultimate middle finger to the crowd. So I think Shinsuke should start the show, call out whatever. CM Punk comes out, they have the match. Because I think the problem with this, if you don't start the show with it, they're going to be chanting his name throughout the whole night and it's going to be a distraction. So I would have CM Punk return in the opening match.
I like that actually a lot. I think Shinsuke is a guy where we talked about it all the time. Like leading up to, I guess, this situation here, he had, was it four world title matches with Rollins?
Three or four.
He swung out. He lost on all of them. I remember the last man standing. I said to you, I'm like, this is the moment he wins. This is the moment where he wins the world title and we actually get a serious world champion in Shinsuke Nakamura that we've never seen. He flirted with it when he won the Royal Rumble, lost to AJ, and then turned heel that night. But I think this would be the beginning of a massive, massive heel turn. And he's had a great year, Shinsuke. This guy, like, for years was struggling to get on TV. So the fact that you say that about CM Punk opening the show with Shinsuke, you know what? Good on Shinsuke, because this is a guy that I did not think would be in this position. You know, CM Punk is one of my favorites. He's been one of my favorites for 15 years now. I think he's the type of guy, kind of like a Brock Lesnar, where he's either, when he's rumored, he's either opening the show or he's closing the show. Now, the only concerning thing here is now you have a legend, a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest we've ever seen in Randy return after 18 months in the main event. Does that mean CM Punk closes the show to, you know, take the spotlight from Randy and you kind of maybe build a Randy CM Punk feud?
Well, that was my next question is, if he does return and it's not Shinsuke, who do you guys see Randy? Who do you guys see CM Punk feuding with? Is Randy Orton going to be that guy? I mean, there's got to be somebody else that's on the card that he could want to feud with. I mean, he had so many beefs with so many people back in the day.
It's not Logan Paul.
No, it definitely won't be him. No, he learned his lesson there. But I do think it would be interesting to see, like, who do you guys think off top? Will it kick off right away, or would it be just him returning and dropping a promo and fucking off for the show? What do you think?
I think he will start with a Shinsuke Nakamura, get his feet wet. Shinsuke has been red hot as a heel. But if there is like a big picture here, I'm going to say Seth Rollins. Yeah. I just think the way he's been positioned as that face, he hasn't really lost a lot. CM Punk is a tweener. I don't care what anyone says. The only time he was a baby face was 2012 when he was feuding with guys like, when he was making fun of guys like Kevin Nash and Laurinaitis. But other than that, he was never really a baby face. He was like a tweener, like a guy that would act as a good guy, but then he'd push another guy out just to get the pin. Remember Big Show Cena? So there's instances like that where I think CM Punk can really thrive with a Seth Rollins at this point in his career. And if there's one guy that can steal a world title and shove it in your face and everyone enjoys it, it's CM Punk.
Yeah, I think this could be, like, big picture, I think, like, Royal Rumble, the WrestleMania, night one, main event, that's probably, like, the selling point, CM Punk and Seth Rollins in the main event. What I would, like, do long-term is start planting the seeds for Cody and CM Punk, because, like, CM Punk can bring up the AEW stuff, like, your friends who can mention the Young Bucks and mention all that stuff. You were a part of it, and they can start a beef there. So I think they should plant the seed slowly for that, because after Cody's done with Roman, and Roman's probably off TV for another 8 months after that, they're going to need some guys to feud with and do something with. So I think CM Punk and Cody long-term, short-term, you do Seth and CM Punk.
So you have a petty CM Punk as that heel? That's awesome.
Well, I mean, I feel like at this point, that's the only CM Punk people want to see. They don't want to see anything else. I mean, that's who he is, and that's what he's branded himself as. That's what he was at his peak. I don't know why you would want to see him any other way. It's the same with Randy Orton. Everyone loves Randy as a heel. You don't want to see him any other way.
I think the only thing with Randy that kind of concerns me is he's been off for so long that I think they might just be like, yeah, we'll make you a baby face for like till the Rumble and then we'll turn you heel. I just think when you think about Randy Orton, especially, I mean, it's unfortunate what happened with Matt Riddle. They were a great tag team. He really rejuvenated his career. He's probably thanking Matt Riddle somewhere for that, but it's Randy Orton. We all know eventually he's going to just bounce back. I just see Randy Orton being a guy where if Cody Rhodes does win, I know you said CM Punk and Cody Rhodes, I just think you have to go with, especially right after Mania, you have to go with a heel Randy going against Cody for the belt. You have to do that. That's just way too, the history's there. I know everyone's saying maybe do it now, do Randy versus Cody like right now. I just think you wait after Mania. Randy, we all want Randy to have that world title opportunity again. You do that. I think that's the right approach there.
All right. It sounds like it's going to be a great main event, a great pay-per-view. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Jam-packed as always. They never seem to disappoint. I mean, there's always some duds in the mix, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
With that being said, guys, this is In The Zone signing off. See you guys next week.